evening and welcome to this, the regularly scheduled Tuesday, June 25th, Shelburne 2019, Shelburne Select Board meeting, which I now call to order. The next item is to approve the agenda. Is there discussion, an amendment, a motion to that effect?
So moved.
Mary moves.
I second.
Mike seconds. Discussion? Any discussion in the public? Hearing none, seeing no hands, those approving, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. And those opposed, nay. The ayes have it. For the record, Jamie will not be here this evening. He is absent, and Colleen is expected possibly at some later time. As well, we have the acclaimed, beloved, and professional, Peter Frankenberg tonight as acting town manager, who is here in the absence of Lee Crone, who was on vacation. The item approved select board minutes we will not take up because we do not have a quorum for that particular meeting. The next item are public comments. We've invited Joan Lennis, who will make the first of them, to speak to the recent passing and the exemplary public service record of Sally Sowell.
Can I pretend that's one? How about it? Well, we don't know if it's picking it up anyway. Okay, so I'll stand here. This is awkward.
Tom's isn't connected. Yours isn't connected.
No. This is okay. How's this?
Okay. Excellent.
This is quite an honor for me. Thank you for asking me to do it. Sarah, Sally's daughter is with us. I think we're all sisters. I met Sally Sowell first by reputation in the community, a woman you have to know, a leader, an involved, caring individual. And I was, you know, involved with PTOs and school boards and community involvement, but what a leader she was. And she met me, and the camaraderie and the caring and the human touch that she gave to me, and I thought it was so special, but she gave it to everybody. Sally's heart and soul are just so full, and she was a leader to me on a lot of levels, as a caring community member, as a woman, as a politician. She brought honor to that name, and I tried to carry that forward in my work. And for me, it's important that we're kind and that we care for one another and that we listen. And nobody can teach that lesson better than Sally did for me personally, but for everybody. And I said to Sarah, is there something that sticks out that I don't want to slight her? I mean, her list of accomplishments, and Lisa did a great job in the article in the Shelburne News, her list of accomplishments are many, but her heart, her being a mother, and a mother in the bigger sense, not just to the four of you, but a mother to me and many. And I just hold on to people like that, to human beings like Sally Sowell, but to help others come along that way, whether it's in an educational place, in our families, in our community. We've got to have role models like that, and she has created many. And again, thank you. I care a lot, but it's quite touching, and the honors will be many for Sally, but this means a lot. And actually, We have a Madeline Kunin Leadership Award from the organization Emerge Vermont, and Sally was the first recipient a couple years ago, and she wasn't able to come. And Sarah posted a picture of her holding the award, but the big joke is, don't let Sally know she's on Facebook, because she wouldn't like that. So if anybody ever saw her, oh, I ran into Sarah and she told me. No, I read it on Facebook. But so that was a real honor for me to be able to do that, and she was pleased. So thank you. And let us all carry a little bit of Sally in our hearts and souls.
Thank you. We have other guests, any of whom would be interested to say a few words, by all means.
Yes, please.
John?
John Saar, Harbour Road. I'm here because I read the Shelburne News, having been out of town, and I saw the report on the dog park.
John, just let me, can I interrupt 2 minutes? How about we finish our thoughts about Sally before we enter a new subject altogether?
I thought that was
that agreeable.
Okay.
Thank you, John.
Could I just say that
Sarah? This is Sarah. You want to introduce yourself?
I'm Sarah, Sally's daughter. I'm named after my mom. And what Joan said just means so much. And I thank Lisa for her wonderful article. And it's because of her my phone has not stopped ringing. And I've had to almost take it off the hook. But the article really captured my mother. And it's one of those times that I wish I could just pick up the phone and call her and say, Mom, you should see this article. Everybody loves you. And she loved this town and serving the people of Shelburne. And she really was a fair politician. And my brother works with federal government in Washington and works very closely with Peter in Washington, and he works closely with the Intelligence Committee. And he called me today and he said, I got a letter from the entire House Intelligence Committee, and he said they never agree on anything, but they bipartisan all signed this letter to me today saying, we're very sorry about the loss of your mother. But I went to grade school in this building, and my classroom was one floor up. And on my first day of school here, we came in the middle of the year. My mother hated cooking. She hated baking. And we grew up on macaroni and cheese, and I don't eat it anymore. But my first day of school, Mom baked me a dozen cookies to bring in to make new friends. And the friends I have in this town and this community have been wonderful to me and my family as we go through this journey. So she loved Shelburne, and thank you to Shelburne for all you've done for us. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else that would like to join in? I have a kind of an idea in mind, and my colleagues have not heard it yet, and it'll be a little while before it fully develops anyway, but she was such a key figure in a number of organizations that with yours and perhaps Joan's help, if it turns out that down the road some of those decide to create some type of memorial, and I'm kind of thinking especially a scholarship for young women in some way related to public service, I wish and hope you'd come back to us.
I'd be glad to. My work is a college counselor, so
I
that
think
would
we'd be very interested to help someone who's helped make Shelburne what it is.
So thank you.
Thank you much. So. Thank you for coming. Thank you for all of you who could join in with us. Now, John?
And she loved dogs, so I'll just say that.
Thank you.
She got her first dog as a wedding present. On that note, I'll defer.
Apologies for the interruption.
Thank you. There's always room for discussions of a dog park.
Well, I thought I was reading an excerpt from The Handmaid's Tale. when I saw what the Wetlands Commission had said. We could have our rotten little dog part in the wetlands, but we couldn't have a seat there, and we certainly couldn't have any water for our dogs in the summer. I mean, come on, this is Shelburne. We can do better than this. What is wrong with a dog park in the at the top of the post office park, just inside the work lane, where there is reasonably flat land, where you could enclose a couple of acres and everyone would be happy?
Thank you, John. We'll take that suggestion under consideration.
Thank you.
Are there any other public comments, please?
John DeBroek from the Automaster, and why I'm here tonight is I'm just for discussion. I'd like to talk about a fee that we recently encountered, and we're kind of wondering about the logistics of it. In 2013, we bought 13 acres from the Andombacheks, where the Hydahidawee was, and tore it down and cleaned it up and put in all the proper stormwater. Spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on the property, and the town permit fee to do that was $326. This was an addition to our already existing property, an addition to our existing business. And now we're looking at putting a half-acre addition of a gravel parking lot onto an existing parking lot in already owned land that we've taken care of, paid the taxes on, everything like that. And we're looking at a calculated fee of $9,000. And we've been told that the fee structure has changed, and I'd say it probably has, and I'm kind of questioning whether it's to the better or not, and the logistics of it. You know, based on fees like that, you're not going to see a lot of people looking to do too much as far as additions and trying to grow their businesses. So I'm questioning that, and I'd like somebody to look at it, address it, get back to us for that. Maybe a more satisfactory answer.
Thank you. We will follow up. We are ourselves. You may not know, but part of that policy has the town paying fees to itself.
Yeah, probably high ones too.
And as we've been advised on a couple of occasions, the process of changing that is expensive. It's a four-meeting, several public hearing process. And at the time, we did not pursue it, as Dean knows. The issues come up in town terms.
To change the fees are set by the select board, and the reason John is here is because staff advised him that staff cannot modify the fee schedule, but the fee schedule is set by the select board. I had indicated to John that I didn't think necessarily that the board would actually amend the fee schedule, but the fee schedule is a policy.
But it's a policy subject, is it not, to public hearing? It's not a policy?
No, not to my knowledge.
It is not?
It never has been.
Because that's what I recall we were told when we introduced the item of a town not paying itself fees.
Well, it's never been my position that it requires hearings in the manner of an ordinance. There are some policy questions that arise in cases where projects are paid for through a combination of public sources and from private fundraising, which is part of the consideration that the board should give in response to this question or this assertion that paying for itself. But in John's case, the fee structure has changed. The literal interpretation of the fee structure and the bylaws led Ravi to the conclusion that the fee is substantially higher. What had happened when the fee schedule was changed last, that Joe Colangelo thought it would be a one-meeting affair, and in fact it took three or four meetings, not because of any kind of procedural requirements, but because of the policy issues that were raised by the fee schedule question itself. And my distinct recollection is that the fee schedule discussion came about as a result of budget discussions when the board was seriously examining non-property tax-based sources of income.
That's so true. And in our case, none of us were present. So this is a legacy, legacy issue for us. But.
So the feedback for John was he could bring this issue to the attention of the board. Lee was away. We copied in Peter. I had thought that I would reach John on Friday. Didn't have his number. Offered to be contacted on Monday. Didn't hear back. I believe Peter had attempted to reach John. Didn't get any response. We felt as staff that the board could certainly acknowledge this and put it on its agenda for revision perhaps request the development of a proposal, but staff alone can't change the fee, which does, I will say, have a distinct part of it, which excludes driveways from the fee calculation, and that exclusion of driveways is something that's new in the fees. It was added. It doesn't exclude parking areas. So one of the questions that is raised is whether or not, if the board wanted to address this issue, it would add parking areas to the exclusion in the manner of driveways. But staff can't do that unilaterally.
Thank you, Dean. Thank you, Peter. Well, I'm encouraged, personally encouraged, to learn that, because my understanding was it had the force of ordinance. And while that wouldn't be reason for us not to embark on a serious review and potential changes, that depends on my colleagues and what we learn in the way of issues. But I'm encouraged and see more light at the end than I did when the night began. So it's only to let you know that there are other issues that have come to our attention about the fees. And my sense is we will be communicating with Lee about the desirability of taking this up, possibly not July 9th, but the second July meeting, at least to get all of the questions on the table.
Yeah. So I guess I would only respectfully ask that I get extension on the time, because there's time limits on how we're allowed to do this project. And that's no fault of my own.
We'll examine that.
And then also the it's of course I would like it expedited as best I can, because it costs us money every day to have the land, pay taxes on land, not sure. Be able to use it. So that's all I would ask.
We'll do our very best to sort sure. that out.
Thank you.
Some of you may not know who arrived. We have no audio tonight through VCAM. We do have video, but our stalwart Tom Tompkins is holding our audio. So anything that helps us, helps Tom, will help our Mary Ann, who does the minutes, largely based on audio record. So if you can help us, that helps a great deal to get as close to Tom as you can. Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it, Dean. Are there any other, Linda?
Linda Real, Falls Road. I would like to compliment the Highway Department and the progress that's being made with the Falls Road little bit of grass area and the bollards that have been placed. And I was pleased to see it was only 2 weeks since the last meeting, and Paul said it would be a month, but 2 weeks, and there it is. So thank you.
Thank you, Linda. That'll be a subject of some of our compliments, too, a little bit later on. That's a really nice piece of work. And there was one other hand. Bruce?
Bruce Nunziata, Falls Road. I would like to basically echo what Linda just said. Really appreciate it. Anybody that walks there, you know, appreciates any effort that can be done to make it a little bit safer and a little more relaxed just to, you know, walk through the village. So thanks to Lee, to on the select board, to the Highway Department, everybody involved. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Bruce. Praise from you is doubly worth it.
Well deserved.
Is there anyone else who would like to raise a public? And last but not least, Ruth, who was kind enough to stall while we were otherwise occupied, to give her a routine report on the new library town center.
Oh, this is strange to see people. So I'm Ruth Hagerman. I represent the library project. So you were all driving around looking for spaces, and you saw that we have some new curbing out there as part of the widening of the entrance. So the entrance to the parking lot is now going to be 3 lanes, one to come in and two to go out. So you could turn left or you can turn right going out, which I think is going to be a big improvement. The cement should all be poured by the end of the week. The paving of the lot, we're going to repave everything from pretty much this end over the end of the Rotary Park. I couldn't think of the name of it. The Rotary Park over. That will happen in a couple of weeks. We don't want to put that down and then have more heavy truck traffic. In this week's trailer meeting, where we meet with the construction company, we actually started talking about when we were going to meet with the landscapers to begin to really look at the plants themselves that have been ordered per the plan. That made me very excited because that means we're really seeing the end, right? You don't plant trees till they're pretty much the end. Town Hall, there's still some little bits of things that need to come into Town Hall, but we've gotten the basement to the point now where we can use it for staging, to bring in the things that have been scattered out all over town for the last year. We've stored a lot of bits and pieces of the old library all over the place. We can now bring them back to Town Hall, sort through them, and then get them back where they're supposed to be. So that's really great. And then once we're out of there, then we can go ahead and finish hanging the doors in there. And then the new building, they just continue working like mad on it. We finally got staircases everywhere, so you can get to all the floors on stairs. They let me go up on the roof last week as part of the solar meeting. That was very exciting, but you have to do a ladder to do that, so that was not so great. The elevator, we're still waiting for the elevator to arrive. We have been promised that it will be here next week. We'll have to see if it shows up. That's actually kind of a stall in the project that Nagley and Chase is working very hard to sort out. They've contacted their lawyer. There's been a big exchange of letters. Elevators, apparently, this always happens when you put an elevator in. The woodwork has started to come in. The woodwork is coming in with the countertops mostly already installed, so we're beginning to see kind of what our color scheme is going to be, and it all looks really great. Otherwise, there's just guys over there all the time still cutting and welding and hammering, and we're looking for completion, but we're not giving any dates until that elevator is here and the guys are actually standing there putting it in, and then we will calculate the completion date and we will let everybody know at that time. So I don't know if anybody has any questions, anything?
That's great. Thanks, Ruth.
I'll just say I was fortunate enough to get a tour last week with Kathy Townsend, and it really is phenomenal. I was brimming over with pride. I think it's going to be such a great asset for the town. I can't wait. It really looks phenomenal.
Any questions of Ruth about the project? Hearing none. Any other public comments? Hearing none, seeing no hands. The next item is an executive session. It's our practice to move two motions to enter it, in which case we'll start.
I would move pursuant to 1 VSA section 313 to find that premature general public knowledge of the town's strategy and pending litigation would clearly place the town at a substantial disadvantage, so that we would need to go into executive session.
Moved by Mary.
Second.
Seconded by Mike. Any discussion? Hearing none. Those approving, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And those opposed, nay.
Pursuant to 1 VSA section 313, I move to enter executive session to evaluate the town's position and strategy in pending litigation regarding the Clark Castle zoning appeal, and to invite the acting town manager, legal counsel, and the town planner to participate.
I'll second that.
Seconded, moved by Mary, seconded by Mike. Any further discussion? Hearing none. Those approving, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. And those opposed, nay. Our estimate would be probably 15 to 20 minutes. Thank you. Exit executive session and resume the general meeting.
So moved.
Mary moves. Mike seconds. Any discussion? Hearing none. Those approving, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. And those opposed, nay. The ayes have it. For those of you who have arrived at the meeting at this point and were not here sooner, there's several things to know. Jamie and Colleen are not present tonight. We also do not have audio tonight. Tom Tompkins has been very generous and thankfully is saving the evening for us. So if and when you have occasion to speak, we'll ask you to be very close to him and his handheld device, because that's the only way we're able to record this meeting. Thank you. The next item on the agenda is select board comments.
I wanted to just report that the fire and rescue committee, recall our actual name, met, and that the they went before the DR, or that the application for the development at the fire and rescue lot that's being considered went before the DRB, and it was approved in the initial sketch plan review, which was nice. There were discussions and issues raised about the siting of the actual proposed fire and rescue building, but all of these fell under allowable exceptions under the PUD zoning, as I understand it. There are some interesting issues about cost benefit for blasting up against the back of that lot that at some point I think we'll want to consider and talk about. But that was nice to see that that's going to be moving forward now. I did have a related question, and I just put it out here for the colleagues to consider about what a liaison's role actually is, since I'm a liaison, and I wondered what does that exactly mean. So at some point, I understand generally the role of a liaison, but am I representing the board in these official events? Am I speaking for myself? Is my role just to provide information back to the select board? I know I sent you a note and asked Jerry for some clarification. So I don't know if that's something we want to discuss or have a kind of a more formal discussion about. But just kind of curious, what does it actually mean to be a liaison?
Did you get my response?
I did. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Well, I think that's a great set of questions.
Yeah.
So what happens when you elect a philosopher to the select board?
That's right. What is a liaison? And am I real? Am I a real liaison?
I think I'm a liaison?
Anyway.
Yeah. No, I think that's we've sort of matured to the point where that is a discussion.
Well, I just know that during conversations, I wanted to say what I thought was an appropriate response to some issue that came up. But I felt conflicted. Am I speaking? I'm speaking for myself. But is that going to be construed as a representation of the wants and wishes of the board? So, just a little guidance at some point, and maybe we can have a conversation about that. What exactly a liaison's role is.
I think we shouldn't. I think we'll ask Lee to put it,
seems like an appropriate,
maybe the second July meeting. The issue here is we've made a very strong effort to distribute responsibilities among all of us who are equally elected and who represent a pretty extraordinary set of skills to be individually responsible as points of contact and development leads on a variety of issues. I think that distribution ensures the best and the most efficient use of your resource, which we represent, and at the same time it gives the community access, in effect, as an outreach measure, to four more people to talk to at any one point on any one issue. And I sense that it's been successful enough that even though it's our current practice, we don't have policy to that effect. And there's some pretty good questions of when a select board member goes to a meeting, is there any potential for misunderstanding that person is speaking to the entire board? And you have to be very, very guarded about that type of misperception. And as well, there's a set of very careful relationships with the town manager, who frequently has similar, if not the same, responsibilities. So that's what we're discussing. When we've set up committees, some of you are aware recently, we've incorporated a select board member as a part of it. So several of us sit on committees together with some of you. And I think that's a really good set of questions, Mike, and I'm pleased you raised them. Mary?
Sure, I have three comments. One, and I didn't say these things earlier because I wanted to make sure we stayed in order. I know it's going to be potentially a long night, but I did read the paperwork from the Automaster, from the Duke Rules, and I don't have the background to understand better why it is that there would be a $9,000 filing fee for a gravel parking lot. But to me, just on the face of it, that seemed to be one of those anomalous, unanticipated results. And I, for one, really want to figure out that situation because it doesn't seem right. I also wanted to chime in about Sally Sewell. I knew Sally Sewell. And I'm starting to think Shelburne might be a breeding ground for strong women. I mean, I'm thinking here, Kunin, Sally Soule, Joan Lennis, Colleen Haig. So, go Shelburne. And then the third thing I wanted to say is I am in the beginning stages of forming a Shelburne Patrolmen's Benevolent Association. A mouthful, but it's something that we really need. It's sort of fallen in my lap because I have the misfortune of having two initials at the end of my name, JD, which doesn't necessarily mean I know what I'm doing all the time when it comes to the law, and so I'm sort of fumbling through. I'll be engaging the services of an accountant to make sure that we qualify as a nonprofit organization so people can make donations to the organization tax-free. The police department is still in need of cameras and vests, and I, for one, think that Shelburne needs a police dog. And a police dog is a very expensive item. It costs about $100,000. I would like to name the police dog Shelby. But I'm looking for people who might want to be members of the association. We need five directors of the association. So if anyone's interested, please contact me. So I need a president, vice president, secretary, a treasurer, and then directors. So if anyone's interested in that endeavor, please contact me. I'd love to have some help. Thanks.
Well, that's a great idea. I'm thrilled to hear that. For my part, I have several sets of congratulations. We had an opening of the rec program at the beach last week. The weather cooperated happily, but that event and the continuing programs do not happen without some extraordinary work on the part of not only Betsy and Sue, but a committee led by Peggy. I've heard the committee referred to as a pack. And we have several members here tonight. I want to recognize them because it's an extraordinary amount of work that goes into an event like that. Just cooking up and serving hot dogs and everything else that went on that benefits Shelburne. And I want to recognize Kathy, Tim, Susan, and Dave, Marv, my fellow judge, Halloween, right? Renee, Lynn-Ann, Kelly, Ann, and Bruce for their extraordinary, really extraordinary help, led so capably and ably by Peg Cattu. So thank you. I also want to express great appreciation to Paul Goodridge, our highway superintendent, whose response to, you will recall, our discussion of the grass strip on Upper Falls was prompt and thorough and is still ongoing. I had a little bit of a loss of blood pressure when I passed through the other day and I could see trees being cut down. I thought, gee, it's a little early to tear up that grass strip, you know. But this is all part of a program that we've been discussing for some time, and it's good to see it underway. So thank you very much. The next item is the Quinneaska Shelburne Heights Wastewater Flow Independent Engineering Analysis, updated and continued, from which Mike will recuse himself.
But I think before that you have the acting.
Oh, my colleague. How could we?
happy to be sitting in for Lee today. You don't have to worry about me clamoring for this position, though, so Lee is very safe in that position. But just a couple things following up on Jerry's comment. I don't get to talk about things other than numbers sometimes, so this is kind of nice. I did want to highlight our staff again, Betsy Siplicki and Sue Craig, for their work with the Back to the Beach event. It's a great event. And the Rec Committee as well, very active group, and they have some great programs, so much appreciation for that. And if you think they're taking the rest of the summer off, summer concerts start up, I think, July 10th at Shelburne Farms, another big community event, so thanks to them for organizing all that and participating. We do have a couple of new employees I just wanted to highlight. We've hired Josh Turner in our police department as a part-time officer. Our police department likes to have part-time people that can come in and fill shifts. It saves us having to fill that shift with overtime. So they're always looking for part-time people. He's currently at the training academy and will be certified as part-time very shortly. We did have a turnover in our dispatch center. Kristen Pierce, one of our dispatchers, moved to New York State. She was a great person, great loss for us to have her move, but we wish her well. That position has been filled by Ariel Kilpak, so she'll be working in the dispatch center. And just a word about the dispatch center down in my police department. They really do a tremendous job, and we don't really hear much about them, but they're there 24/7 answering calls. They take 911 calls for this area. They're also part of the statewide 911 network and can be taking calls from all over the state at their center. So they really do a great job. They dispatch for 36 different agencies as well as taking 911 calls. So we don't hear much about them, which is probably good in a way. It means that things are going well. But just want to acknowledge the employees that we've got there. I think they do a great job, and they're definitely there to do as good a job for the community as they can. So a lot of pride in their work. So thank you.
Thank you, Peter. And thank you for your help for the week that Lee's absent. Once again, next item is number 8, Quinnesca Shelburne Heights. I won't repeat it. Mike will recuse, and we'll give him a few minutes, and then we'll get started.
Thanks.
As introduction to it, well, Chris is here tonight. Do you want to review what now is the GME letter of the 6th of June, now also the 14th, extended through the 14th of June, and now revised through the 20th of June?
Yeah, sure, I can do that. So on the 6th of June, due to looking at the slopes and so forth of the pipes in the Shelburne Heights neighborhood, they did find that the pipe on Potter Place was close to what the engineer's recommendations are of 15 feet per second for velocity. With the additional Quinnesca flow, it would increase above the 15%. The other spot that was called out was over by Logan Court, where it's an excessive drop down through there. That already exceeds the standards just with what we have for flow for the Shelburne Heights neighborhood, which will, of course, with the additional flow, will increase that velocity also. I did go out and take a look at the system out there. We camered the lines and through the manholes and looking for any kind of displacement or any kind of erosion that's happening in the inverts and stuff like that, which is what the concerns are when you have high velocities in the pipes like that. It's really concerned about the displacement, but when we went down through and looked, none of the joints have moved one bit. Everything has been operating perfectly fine. So the engineers believe that that's not going to be a concern going forward. The other thing was the 210 gallons per day. I spoke with the state also about it via email because it doesn't make any sense to me. But what they're saying is they do use 245 gallons a day for a component of the system that serves less than 50,000 gallons a day, which they said it's been a practice it's been a rule for a while, but it hasn't. But all the designers I spoke to said they've always used 210 gallons a day and are still using 210 gallons a day. When I contacted the state, I got a response back saying that everything was related to pump stations, and I responded back saying, you know, this is, if it's not for a pump station, if you're looking at a gravity flow, is that? And his answer was, well, I guess kind of yes. But like I said, speaking to every engineer out there, I think they're trying to bridge the difference between a municipal system and septic systems, because the same rules apply for septic systems as they do for municipal systems. But going back a few versions of the rule, they changed that. Everything was the same, and they changed it to be exempt if you're on a municipal system. It was a different number. That's where they came up with the 210 gallons a day. Previously, it used to be based on the number of bedrooms that you had and stuff, sort of like how the water is designed now. So I thought it was kind of strange that they're now calling out this 245 gallons a day. I still haven't really gotten a decent clarification from Ernie Christensen on that. But either way, the additional 240, if they go by 245 gallons a day per household, it brings us up from 58% capacity of the pipe up to 60%. So it's still kind of insignificant still. So it's, so that's really what the Green Mountain Engineering report showed.
Thank you, Chris. I think the summary sense here is that we have responded on now three serial occasions to questions that were raised. We did so at our own initiative, and we're not looking for compliments here. We're just trying to summarize where we stand. I think it's a fair assessment of our findings that this system is reliable. That's what the figures are confirmed to show. In any case, I think it's our feeling at this point that we would need to know why not, further than what we've been asked as questions and what we have researched as answers that demonstrate that this system is reliable. If the system is reliable, then the question of being indemnified is a slightly different question. And as you'll recall, we felt that the question number four on the petition of notice was a good one. It's an alive question in some other circumstances of town activity. We will certainly take that up as a general matter at some point in the near future. But I think in a way not meant to disrespect your concerns, and before we hear more of them tonight, I think our basic position is the ball's in your court now. We've conducted the research, we've confirmed the figures that were in use, we've answered additional questions, fortunately we had the technology of a camera to be able to do an in-situ test. We put that down the tubes, down the pipes. We did not look at the pump stations for the fact that those are unrelated, directly. Yeah. And I think we're at the point where we need to understand what further questions you have, why those have not been addressed in part or in whole. We can't make any decisions tonight anyway, we don't have a quorum. We'd have to discuss over time how we would deal with those further questions. So would anyone like to speak? You want to start, Bill?
Sure. Is it okay if I use that microphone?
It won't get back to anybody. This is just inside.
If you need to amplify
your voice, it'll amplify it for those in the room, but it won't give us a record.
We have a video record, by the way, but we don't have an audio one.
Well, then you could put any words in my mouth. Yeah. There you go.
It would be difficult for us to do anything.
Anyway, I just wanted to thank the board and for your patience in this matter, and to realize that our intent here is to avoid a public health crisis. You know, this isn't just the sewer system. When sewage is coming into your house or is in the neighborhood, it's a public health crisis. So we appreciate your due diligence and looking and seeing and what you've done so far. But there are reasonable doubts that the neighborhood has that this system was designed to be a link in a chain. And you know, we have circumstantial evidence from Paul Boney saying that this system was fraught with disaster. A neighbor just brought in a document where Paul Boney, who is the former town manager, said that The project to install a sewer system in Shelburne Heights has been about as difficult as can be imagined. What was promised as to be relatively simple and completed in a short time frame is fraught with unknown problems which have negatively impacted the schedule and ease of construction. Anyway, I'll give you a copy of that. So we have reason to believe that our system had difficulty when it was being installed because there's ledge there. And I found it interesting that your reading of the second Green Mountain Engineering Report, my takeaway is that they found the system is deficient. There's no two ways to misinterpret that. They found that the system as it is now was not constructed per rules. It's too steep. There's problems that they know of based on the current plans that they were looking at. And finally, the as-built plans, the engineer says they don't really know that they're the as-built plans. It doesn't even look like it's certified by an engineer. How can you say that this is okie dokie? This is an impending public health crisis. And when I started this project, you know, I was fine because, okay, let's just make sure this is going to work. The further I get into this thing, I'm convinced this is going to be a disaster. And we have problems in town already. And the town's solution is to stick a camera in a hole and look at with no baseline information to say everything looks fine. It's not displaced. Well, we know it's working fine now. The issue is when you hook it up, you more than double the capacity, what is going to happen? And we don't know. These engineers don't know. Nobody in this room knows. We're just going to hope for the best. And the problem that I have is there's a viable and safe alternative that was vetted through the DRB going down Webster Road. Why can't you just do that? I don't see why the town has to shove this down our throat. What I heard is they want to save a couple bucks on electricity. Is that savings worth the risk of killing this neighborhood? You know, we put a lot of time into this. The neighbors, not everyone's here. Everyone is on board with this. It's not like it's 50-50. The whole neighborhood is alarmed about this. And, you know, I was disappointed that Jamie Hines wasn't here because he seems to be the point person. He's dealt with these issues before. But my reading of the Green Mountain Engineering Report is that our system has problems now. When you hook up double the capacity, given the issues that we have, who knows what's going to happen? We're going to have fountains everywhere. And, you know, if it's so damn important to shove it down our throat, then do it. But know that you're going to be, you know, there's a written record that we asked for these things. And I would imagine that when Green Mountain Engineering did the study and looked at the slope and the velocity, that I was expecting you to say, you know, thanks, we averted a disaster. Instead, I hear from the town manager, everything's fine. I mean, I don't know what document he's looking at. And I wish somebody would tell me that I'm wrong. But the further we go into this, I'm concerned that I'm right. Do I need to show you on the Green Mountain Engineering? So let me read it to you.
Which one are you reading from now?
Here, why not give it to you?
Well, I have them. Just tell me the date.
Revised June 20th.
Well, there's two letters, one dated June 14, revised June 20, and one dated June 6.
Yeah, it's respective. Okay.
Okay.
This should replicate your document.
I have it.
Okay. So it's the fifth paragraph down, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So if you read that paragraph regarding the as-built plans and the as-built plans are important. Let me just define, in my mind, what an as-built plan is. It's the final, after a project is completed, the engineer or the contractor provides a document that shows you have the projected plan, the idealized plan, the way it was designed, and then what they actually did. There's fantasy and reality. What we don't have is the reality. We don't have evidence that we have the as-built plans. So why is that important here? Because we have circumstantial evidence from the town manager that this project was fraught with problems. He defines it as a nightmare. So we can expect that chances are things had to be rerouted, and it's very important to know what was done. And if you don't know what was done, how can you evaluate the safety of it? Secondly, to make any decisions without the as-built is irresponsible. Finally, and we have an, if you go to the second page, and here's what the as-builts are important. This is going to be a demonstration of proof of the concept of why the as-builts are important. If you go to the second to the last paragraph, one, two, three, third sentence. At this point, it would be difficult to determine if the cross-country sewer pipe section was designed and constructed in accordance with these two requirements, as concrete collars and other methods of construction, if present, would be buried at pipe depth. Now, he can't make the decision because he doesn't have the plans that would show the correct construction. So this is why the as-builts are important. We have one problem that we know about where it should be reinforced. He doesn't know. Basically, he's saying, dig up the system and see. We don't know what we don't know. The only knowledge that we have in this whole damn thing is that it works fine now, and that chances are if we hook up double the capacity coming through the thing, we're going to have problems. And now I'm convinced of it, and I'm alarmed. And I'm sorry I'm getting emotional over this, but it's gone from something that was a financial concern to now it's a public health concern. And I don't know what we have to do other than dig up the system and realize, say that it's going to work. Just reroute the damn thing. I mean, just go down Spear Street and go that way if you have to go to some other plant that we don't know. But go down Webster Road. That's the way it was designed. That's the path of least resistance. There's a reason the town doesn't want to go down there. It can't be that to save electricity when you can ruin a neighborhood. And it's not like you're going to be surprised by it, like, oh, we shouldn't have did that. Chances are something bad is going to happen. You know, it's irresponsible. I can't imagine doing this. And I don't know the rest of the story, and I just wish that, you know, a ruling could be rendered that, you know, hey, you know what? The developer wanted it to go down Webster Road. With what we've uncovered now, there's enough uncertainty. Send it down Webster Road. If you had no other alternative other than to shove it down our throat, that would be one thing. Because you have a viable and safe way to alternative, there's really no reason to keep coming here. And I really appreciate your time on this.
Thank you, Bill. You have been a little generous with your criticism of us in repeating the phrase, shove it down your throats. And I'd like to take momentary issue with that because we're your neighbors. We wouldn't expect that behavior from you if you were on this side of the table, and you shouldn't expect that behavior from us on our side of the table. We're making a concerted effort to solve a problem. I can appreciate your emotion and your partisanship. I can appreciate the degree to which I think some of your comments are generous with criticism. But I don't think we should accept the fact that there's some characterization of us as shoving anything down a fellow citizen's throat. Would anyone else like to comment? Tony?
Tony Supple. I would just like to read more from the report. That I feel is also very telling. So on the June 14th revised report from Green Mountain Engineers.
Is this the composite, Tony, that's got all three in one place? 6, 14, and June 20?
I just have the email that I was sent on the 20th.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and it's...
So this likes the June 20th, yeah, okay.
Right. So it reads, two sections of gravity sewer were identified on the plans where either the slope or the velocity in the pipe currently exceed thresholds established in the rules and may exceed those thresholds with connection to fairway at Spear. And then it goes on to discuss the actual, what those measurements are and so forth. The Potter Place pipe segment would not have met either threshold at the time it was designed and construction. The cross-country segment, and this is, we're talking about Logan Court, exceeded both the 20% slope threshold and the 15 feet per second velocity threshold. At this point, it would be difficult to determine if the cross-country sewer pipe section was designed and constructed in accordance with these two requirements, as concrete collars, as Bill had read, for other methods of construction, if present, must be buried at the pipe depth. The slope at Logan Court, actually, talking about the maximum velocity, they're saying fairway at Spear, it will be 22.3 gallons per second, which is well above the 15 gallons per second requirement. So I don't know how you can say, again, that this meets the, you know, that it works, that it will work. So, you know, our feeling is that the study very clearly shows that it won't.
Well, the engineer went on to say, if we read the final sentence in that paragraph, that the town could perform manhole inspections and or TV inspection, which is what I believe Chris just reported we did.
Right, but what do you have to compare that to? When was the last baseline done?
There has been nothing. There's nothing that's been moved.
No, but what are you comparing it to? So how do you know nothing's moved if you don't have anything to compare it to?
Well, when you have two pieces of pipe that are like this and they're pushed together, and that's
Chris,
the way
you may need to speak up.
And that's the way they're installed. And then when you go and check, and they're still like this, I mean, if they were pulled apart, you'd say, well, was it installed that way? Pulled apart a little bit, but everything was tight. There wasn't any movement. And I can add one other thing that I should have mentioned in the beginning. That section by Potter Place is ductile iron pipe rather than PVC, which I'm not sure, maybe Andy can answer the reason why, but my assumption is because of that slope and so forth is why they put that ductile iron in. So whether or not they reinforce collars and stuff like that, I have no idea, but there's a reason why everything else is PVC, and that was ductile iron for some reason. So,
yeah, I thought it was down at
Logan Court.
Yeah.
That it was the
that's
what it was.
Logan
Court, not
Potter Place.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Logan
so,
Court.
Did you examine at the bottom of Potter Place?
Yes.
Okay.
I have a comment.
As you know, it's our habit to allow others to speak before a person speaks a second time. Is there anyone else here tonight, sir?
Roland Limoges, and we do live in Silver Heights, at the bottom of the Potter Place. I want to thank the fellows for the incredible concern and work that they've done. It's so impressive, and we appreciate it a great deal. If I may, I want to share, this discussion has been going on a long time, since 1999 at least, and I have some documents from there that I'd like to share with the board.
Can you stand next to Tom so we can pick up your voice?
If you turn to page 2 on the back of page 1, there is, this is a question and answer document from way back then.
But before you start,
yes, sir.
What occasioned this and who's answering the questions?
This is from 1999, and honestly, I do not know, Jerry.
Okay.
I do not know. Honestly, I don't.
Are these town answers to?
I think they're questions and answers from both. That's what I gather from this.
Okay.
What I'm referring to is this. If there is a new development on the east side of Spear Street, will it be allowed to connect to the new sewer system in Shelburne Heights? If it's allowed to connect, will the developer be required to pay for part of the sewer going through Shelburne Heights? There is presently no proposed or permitted development for the east side of Spear Street. If a developer were to propose to connect it to Shelburne Heights, the town would seek to require the developer to pay for a portion of share of the capital costs that are being paid by Shelburne Heights property owners. Assessment on Shelburne Heights property would be reduced accordingly. This, I think, Koniaska piggybacks on this east side of Spear Street development. And I think there is precedent here, if there is additional development, that the charges in the system would be picked up by developer proportionally.
You're going to have to help me here now.
Okay, I'll try.
This is, we're east of Spear.
East of Spear?
If the town would seek to record.
East of Spear Street, Jerry,
right,
is where the same side that Koniaska Golf Course
yes,
is now on.
But that's not what we're
no,
doing.
But I'm talking about, they were talking about if additional lines come
this
to
is,
Shelburne Heights.
This is the potential threat or promise, and however you want to see it, of extending sewer across Spear Street.
No.
No?
No. Koniaska is on the...
I understand that. We're dealing with not east of Spear Street.
You got it, yeah.
We're dealing with west of Spear Street.
I understand that.
So how does this apply?
It said if future development occurs
east of Spear Street.
But in my opinion, it doesn't make a difference if it's east or west. If it's going to go through, what I give is going to be going through Shelburne Heights.
Okay. I'll accept your point if you say east or west,
yeah.
Right?
Thank you, sir.
Because in writing, it doesn't say east or west. It just says east.
Right.
Okay. So you were helping us once again. We're quite reliant on the memory, collective memory, with more information than we have.
It's amazing. Since 1999.
And this predated by several years. Was it, Ken, can you help? If you got, you must have some memory of this in terms of, were you on the board when this was?
I believe I was, and it took a while before the plans actually came to reality, and I believe the system went in, I think it was in the 2003 time frame, am I correct?
01 to 03 was the time table.
Right, so these were documents. I fuzzily remember, you know, a lot of question, what happens if this future development, and, you know, would they be able to help with any kind of costs? And I only have a very fuzzy recollection of that, but this does not sound inconsistent with that, you know, type of discussion we had then. It took a while before, you know, from discussion to the actual system being built. So this was obviously an early discussion in the whole saga. So it took a number of years. It took, I think, considerable time before there was a sufficient consensus in Shelburne Heights before they actually implemented it. So this being 19, what'd you say?
1999,
and the bill 2003 makes a lot of sense.
This seems to relate, is this a fair assessment? This seems to relate more so to the question of restitution.
Possibly.
Yeah, and that's good too. We still have four matters that were identified by petition. We're not neglecting or getting any of them. And this is, I think, in those terms, very helpful. Because this appears to establish a policy position of some kind for east of the street, but
moving forward.
You could make an argument about that in terms of development just between you and your street. Yeah, that's I understand that. So this is helpful relating to that issue, and we thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
I mean, any of this diary entries, old Christmas card, I mean, anything anybody's got here. I've been reading a history of, just 1 minute, I see your hand. I've been reading an extensive, very, very detailed history of Normandy. And there are several in celebration, memory, in reminding remembrance of D-Day. And one of the interesting things that this author has made use of, that the planners of that whole of D-Day made use of, was to ask British residents and many others to send them as many postcards as they had of the French beaches. And in came eventually a million or more postcards and photographs and letters from people all over the world who had visited that area and sent pictures and accounts and descriptions. And as a central feature of this account, they have postcards that show with some great precision exactly where the features were and what we lost a lot of very good people subduing. But it was a very interesting to me use of what would seem to be a pretty banal condition, which is postcards, and yet they turned out to be instrumental in some of our success.
Thank you, sir.
So I equate that with your help, because we're as good as what we know, and our records are very spare. Most of the people involved are no longer here, won't be here, and it will be very helpful going forward if we can have this kind of assistance. There's no question about it.
So there is some precedent.
Yeah, but there's an indication of the fact that it was being discussed.
Right.
And it's good to know that payment in some form, whether it takes a form 20 years later of restitution, or whether it takes the form of additional assessment, whatever, was being discussed should there be extra use of it.
Mm-hmm. The payment could be immediate.
So could our salaries be, increased, but anyway, but I thank you.
Thank
I
you.
Really do thank you for, and as we go forward, we've committed to you to address the other questions, and as we go forward and develop questions, we may do a kind of a sheet of here's what we'd like to know. Can anybody help, or does anybody remember? And at that point, we would ask all of you to respond. And some of you are uniquely intelligent here about this whole matter. So we thank you.
Jerry, if I may, I'd like the public to thank Tony and Bill for what they've done. They've done an incredible job. And their presentation tonight is really heartwarming.
Yes, indeed. Absolutely.
Thank you, Jerry.
There was, ma'am? Sorry. I'm sorry, you're going to need to help us with
Evelyn Dossman.
Yes, you're going to have to talk up some so we can hear you.
Oh, it's not loud enough?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm Evelyn Dossman, 52 Colomer Court. I'm an owner and I'm an old one, I guess, because we moved in around 1999.
Oh.
Okay, but not BC. it's practically 20 years. And I can remember that we were told that there will be no following or connection with ever with another development, because there were people who were not didn't want to go with the sewer system. They said they had their own system still running, and so that was a big discussion. Do we need it? Do we want to have it, or don't we need it? Don't we want to have it? And the problem was also that getting a sewer system in meant that we have to deal with blasting, like, because we are a very ledgy area, okay, and a terrace area, as you know now from other place, that goes very deep, steep down. And I have a feeling, I'm sorry, I have a feeling as if it is déjà vu again, because first of all, we were told there is no connection ever. It's only our sewer system and that's it. Okay, so the people accepted it and it was fine. And I give you an idea how engineers at that time were discussing things, and it's really déjà vu. So I have here some texts here, sewer line construction update from November 8, 2000. Okay, it means boring has been completed to determine the extent of ledge. That was a problem at that time. It is somewhat more extensive than estimated. That was one thing. The other was testings were completed to determine conflicts with the water lines. Conflicts are minimal. So, and then...
Who said this? Who was...
This was from Paul Boney.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. I have all this stuff in my husband always says, so many things.
Good.
So, and then I found this one here. This is from July 25th, 2001, to the residents of Shelburne, and also signed by Paul Boney. The project to install a sewer system in Shelburne Heights has been about as difficult as can be imagined. What promised to be relatively simple and completed in a short time frame has been fraught with unknowns, which have negatively impacted the schedule and ease of construction. So, the major factor, and for this whole problem, the major factor was the extensive ledge. There was 2.5 times more ledge than thought. And so, I mean, that's the problem. We cannot foresee things, yeah? We have, it's the same with the, this connecting the system to another one, or want to connect to our system, because we don't know really what's going on. An engineer can tell you everything he wants. Yeah, that's my experience too, because I was in that field working too. You can manipulate practically things. No, I mean, this is possible. When you want to have something, you can work that way through. And so this is a problem with what is reality and what is said to us. And this is a history. And from my point of view, I have a problem to trust here, really, because it was also said that this whole development, I was surprised how it went, the whole situation that we on a sudden had to face a development of over 90 houses there. And seeing how it was done, all the concerns we had, what I heard people saying, blasting, for example, this will be a big problem, because we had this, we experienced it by ourselves for a little pipe, actually. And here to have a total development and saying, for us it's not a problem, I have a hard time to believe that.
Thank you. We appreciate your comment. I have to respond, at least to this extent. It's not totally convincing to read and hear accounts of how difficult this project was, because the difficulty of a project doesn't necessarily translate to an unstable or not reliant system. Sometimes the more difficult the project, the better the building. First. Second, we're very sensitive to the issue of trust here. So sensitive that when we sought the help of a contractor, we made a great effort to hire someone who had no relationship to this town, was an unknown. There were many others who would have willingly helped, some of them for very little money. But we made the decision that anybody that could be perceived, not documented, perceived as friendly to the town or familiar to the town should not be the person to whom we went for this consultant advice and review. And I hope that's not only well understood, but accepted in fact. So I have no idea whatsoever who this gentleman is. There's no relationship between us and this gentleman. And I want to assure you then that we're not listening to an engineer who somehow is telling us what we want to hear. I appreciate your concern because I think it emanates from the sense of distrust that's a rage here and is understandable. And we will do our very best to deal with that. But once again, we thank you for your input. In a way, we're very fortunate to have the number of you who were here at the start of this whole matter, and that's going to help us a great deal when we sit down and contemplate the other issues in the petition. So, thank you.
I think, Mr. Chairman, there's more people who wish to speak, yep. And also I would like to make a comment at some point.
I'll be really quick. This is more for my own education. I'm not an engineer, so I would appreciate help from Chris or anyone else. In those documents from the engineering firm of June 6, 14, and 20, it talked about, I live at the bottom of on the corner of Pearson and Potter, so I particularly caught the comment about the slope. And I believe it said, and please correct me if I'm wrong, I think it said the original design of the slope of Potter Place, which is steep, is too steep. Not by a lot, but it's too steep. So if that's the case, that just caught my eye, like it would anyone.
Sure.
And then the next question is, well, if you open the manhole pipe and you test it for displacement of the existing condition, and there was nothing there, well, how does that, what is that? That just tells you that the current slope for the houses that are pushing the effluent down, there's been no displacement. But that's not really, that means we've been okay with something that was incorrectly designed per the slope for the what's going down. But what happens when you hook in the other 90 houses? Common sense would tell you that there's more effluent going down, and I'm not sure when you say displacement, but I presume it means a pipe is this big and there's this amount of stuff going down, and the more stuff that goes down, the more pressure is created, and therefore the more likelihood of displacement. So I missed the part about what good is it if you check for displacement under current conditions. We want to know the likelihood or probability of displacement when you add 90 houses, which is 100% more than what we have in our neighborhood. So that, to me, is that's my fundamental. And I'm not an engineer. I just don't want to be at the bottom where shit goes downhill and have it be in my yard.
Chris, you want to respond?
So that's the concern when they talk about the slope and the velocities like that, is the displacement and erosion that occurs. Our plan going forward is to go back and camera that on a regular basis and see if there's any, you know, once the project's going through there, see if there's any displacement, and if it is, we'll address the concern at that point, which is you know, I don't see much changing in the pipes. I can see it where it hits the inverts of the manholes.
What's an invert manhole?
Invert is the channel. The channel that's typically formed out of concrete. In the case of Shelburne Heights, which is not what we do now, but they have brick and mortar in there forming the channel in the bottom of the manhole. And when you come down a slope like that, and your manholes are always set flat, so when we come down a slope like that, if you're going to get any erosion, it's going to happen once you hit that manhole. And any displacement, because all your force is going to be coming down and hitting that manhole. My assumption is, with all the ledge that was in there and everything else, everything is pretty well anchored. You know, we're not dealing with saturated wet soils. We're not dealing with sandy conditions where things could potentially move. But it's coming down and it's hitting that invert and that manhole. We'll go back and check that on a regular basis. If the case is that it's starting to erode that channel, then, you know, we can put epoxy coating in there. There's things that we can do to alleviate it. So, I mean, that's what I would say the plan moving forward would be, to just keep an eye on that over a period of time, just to reassure everybody that everything's looking
fine.
Just
a follow-up question. So, Chris, when they did put the sewer in, I have a little, I like to call it a brook, but it's really a drainage corridor. When they put the sewer in, when they blasted the street, it fractured some limestone or whatever. And anyone that lives in our neighborhood will tell you that now, that swale, and I've stopped mowing it because I can no longer do it. It's extremely wet. It comes down the hill. It's running. It now runs year-round. And it's, you can see it. Paul Goodrich can go out there because I'm no longer cutting it. And it's really soggy. The ground is totally saturated. In fact, there's so much water that has come down that hill that where it goes into the manhole or the big pipe that comes out, it's eroded a piece of that property. The volume of water has swept the ground away. Now, it's still is captured in that pipe.
Is that on your property?
No, that swale is a town swale. It's a town drainage ditch.
Okay.
But I'm just telling you.
From a stormwater standpoint, I'd like to know where that is. So.
Well, come on by. You can just it's right opposite Roland's house. You can see it as clear as day. Because right now the grass is up to here. I stopped cutting. I just can't cut it anymore. It's so saturated in there, and it's like a sea of muck and gravel.
Okay.
So I just worry. I don't know what happens when it goes into the swale. It turns the corner because it's a hard right angle, and then heads north. And I don't know whether any of that water goes underneath the ground where the sewer pipe is and the roadbed is. I have no idea. But anyone in our neighborhood would tell you that the volume of water that comes down there today, and it happened when I was delighted when they put the sewer in. I was very happy. But it did fracture some of the limestone, and now it runs. So I have a stream in front of my property.
Waterfront property.
Yeah.
Taxes are going up.
So there's two things you typically see in that neighborhood. Because of all the blasting, everything that they did change the way some of the water was moving underground. And that was pretty evident during the construction. And another thing that's typical of any sewer project that's done, or water line project or whatever, is you're bedding the pipe and stuff in stone. So that anything that you get for groundwater that seeps into the ground finds that path of least resistance and runs down along those pipes. That's very common in you know, underground construction.
Thank you. Yes.
Hi. My name's Persa Squirrel, and I live at the end of Logan Court. And I just, forgive me, I have not been involved in this. I've had family issues that have kept me away, and I don't want to have many people repeat things. But I do want to say my parents were in the house I am in before the whole sewer line went in, and my father was a scientist, and he keeps records of everything. So I thought I had just about everything. The one two pager of these questions I did not have, but I think I have just about every other correspondence to and from the town, and various inter neighborhood correspondences as well that people might find of interest. What I can say is I recall it was a saga, as Ken says. This neighborhood went through a lot over a long period of time when this sewer line got put in. Half the systems worked, half of them didn't. Those with the systems that worked didn't feel it was appropriate that they had to pay for a system that did it. There was a whole lot of negotiations town-wide over the costs of installing this. And there were years of negotiations. I have paperwork that goes back way before 1999. But the specifics for this system, there were, I think, at least one, maybe two town bonds that were voted down to pay for it. There was a compromise where some fees were waived, others were not. And I think that's what went into the promise that no other system would feed into this because we were on our own, basically. And we're all going to pay for this for 20 years, and we're now almost done paying for it. And I think that just that there's something really wrong with that. And I think that when people talk about trust, it's not by any means anybody personally here who's currently in the process of trying to deal with this. It's just the long term. This neighborhood has been through a lot. And if this goes through and something goes wrong, I'm not making any threats, but I'm just telling you, you may have a serious, not a revolution on your hands. And I don't think just from this little neighborhood, because the wetlands and the streams, it's going to be not just this neighborhood, it's going to be a mess. And I'm encouraged that things will be watched, but we'll address it at that time is not sufficient. There has to be some backup plans, there has to be some contingencies, not just we'll deal with it whenever, whatever
happens.
There has
to be engineering.
There's got to be a precautionary situation here because this neighborhood has already been through years of these half these systems that weren't working. There were spewing stuff all over. We've lived with that. We compromised, we got together, we solved it. We do not want to go back to anything going wrong again.
But Persis, just to be clear, I don't mean to sound defensive at all, but based on what I've read, what I understand is that the problems that the neighborhood had in terms of sewage had to do with the fact that people's septics were failing.
Yes, individual systems.
And that wasn't
were not
a town
working.
Issue.
That's right.
That was a private issue.
That's right.
And if I understand it, based on what I've read, 74% of the residents of Shelburne Heights wanted to have the sewer system put in.
Ultimately, yes.
And
not at the beginning.
And I understand it's a lot of money and you all are paying for it and it feels like it should belong to you. I get that. It's a difficult problem. But I just want to be clear that the trauma that this neighborhood dealt with respect to sewage, didn't have anything to do with the town. In fact, the town was coming in to help by...
Of course, that's why I say don't take anything personally. Nobody that's talking is saying that blaming the town for anything or not trusting the town. Just telling you the experience that we have had, and we don't want to take the chance of going back and having that experience again.
No, I understand that. I just want to make sure it was clear that the sewer problems that you had were accepted.
Well, and then, frankly, I believe that, frankly, there were a number of people in the neighborhood itself that actually spearheaded the effort to get the sewer system set up, frankly. If you go back far enough, there were enough people there that were trying to instigate that and get that started.
So it's getting...
I just have one more specific question, logic as well. When people talk about doubling the flow, I do not understand how you can go from a 58% fill capacity to a 60% capacity when you're actually
doubling. Question.
So just things like that need to be answered.
So I'd like to make a recommendation given the hour, and because we can be here all night without solving a problem. We can't vote tonight because we don't have a majority here, or a quorum, sorry. My thought is, I read these reports, like with the gentleman in the lime green t-shirt said, I'm not an engineer. I had the same reaction that you had, sir, and Persis that you had. I don't know how you get to 60% capacity by doubling the flow. You're going to add 90 homes and you go from a certain 50 some odd percent to 60. But here's what I'd like to say. We hired this person, this engineer, to be impartial. We did that at your request. The town spent money to hire that engineer to come up with information so that we can make considered and informed decision. I read these reports. I still can't make a considered and informed decision because I don't understand them any better than any of you do, or probably worse than you do. I have the same question. So what I would like to ask the chair is, can't we hear from this engineer at the next meeting? We can't vote tonight. It's an action item. And honestly, footnote, I don't understand the action item, because what we're talking about is a plan that was finally approved by the DRB and no one appealed it. So from a procedural point of view, I'm not quite clear on where we are. But that aside, I know we've hired an engineer. I'd like to hear from the engineer, and I imagine that the folks in this room wouldn't mind asking that engineer some questions so we can all make a considered decision about this.
Well, I can answer that in several ways. We tried to economize a little bit here, and we did not task this engineer to come, which will increase cost considerably. And at this point, simply minding the value of what we have gotten from the dollar that we've spent, I'm not convinced that there's more to learn by having the engineer come here and ask the very same questions that you're asking. Perfect. Second, just give me a minute, Ken. Second, I think you should take all the time you want to ask and talk and reveal and remember and help clue us in, because there are four issues here, as we know. And even resolving the first of them and indemnification as a derivative, and really it's 1A, 1 and 1A, does not solve 2 and 3 or 3 and 4. And we're still about that. Had we had a full membership here tonight, we may have been able to take steps by direction or by consensus or by vote even, although I don't know that I didn't anticipate that would be the case. But I'd like you to continue tonight. We have the rest of our agenda is fairly much a matter of housekeeping, much of it having to do with you, so you're here anyway. But I want to repeat a couple of things. We hired someone who had no known relationship to this town so that we could feel comfortable about saying to you that this was an objective, independent analysis. We've gone back twice and received now three total reports. It doesn't seem to me that we would do more than get any written questions from this discussion tonight and run them back through the engineer in the same way we did, such that I don't know quite the benefit of coming back in another meeting and repeating this discussion. I do see tremendous benefit, and in this I will defer to our colleague Jamie, who's had experience, as you know, with the terraces on in a similar matter, in discussing in more detail the issues of restitution and notice. But I'm concerned that many of you made the effort to come here tonight, and you've sat patiently. And if you have anything more that you'd like to add or you think we should know, I'm anxious that you have the opportunity to do that. Ken.
As far as, you know, I think a lot of the questions here, well, there's two levels of questions. One is, what happened in history? Should there or should there not be another group of houses allowed to go into this sewage system? And then there's the technical questions, which, you know, I think we all appreciate that you did go get an engineer who really is a third-party engineer, and I assume a very objective analysis has been done. But I think to close that, to restrict us and prevent us all from hearing in the flesh from him and ask our, in some cases, semi-educated, in some cases, ignorant questions, it's got to be one of the paths that we use to close this thing. And yeah, it's probably not going to be for free, But I mean, the amount of expense that the town is going to take, going to expend on that, is relatively small. I mean, it's not free. I mean, we're all taxpayers. You know, we have to ultimately pay for that. But I don't think it's unreasonable to have that engineer, the one that did this work and articulated this thing in several pages there, to basically ask to answer us some of the questions that we have, and let's see where that takes us.
We'll take the suggestion. We'll find out if the gentleman's willing to come, which I don't know, because we didn't ask him. So we'll have to find out first whether the person's willing to come, and if so, when. Because again, we just didn't ask the person to do that.
We'll it's interesting. If he's not willing to come, I'd ask him why.
Jeez, come on. Let's not second guess what PE means. I mean, come on now. At some point, we gotta, you know.
I have a question, Mr. Chairman. Yeah. Sort of a point of order on the 4 points that you keep raising, and I missed last meeting because I was out west, and I would have liked to participate by phone, but couldn't. But my understanding was, and I got this from Mr. Supple, that the neighborhood was more concerned with safety in the engineering report than it was with the other items, and perhaps it was just wishful thinking on my part. I'd understood the group was pretty much saying they were abandoning those other items. Is that wrong?
Well,
that's certainly not my understanding. The group has willingly abandoned the other three items in the petition. I think we had that discussion about number two.
Well, if item one is resolved, the other ones are moved. So if it goes down Webster Road as initially designed, the others are become immaterial.
That's clear.
Yeah. Right?
But I thought the others were, if you...
But meanwhile, you have four concerns, right, which we're loyally trying to address.
But logically, I would focus on one.
And yes, of course.
You know, I did read the sewer ordinance, and what the sewer ordinance says, it goes back to 1991. Now, maybe it's been updated since then, but basically, when you hook up to the town sewer, the homeowner bears all risk, 100%. The town does nothing. So in terms of indemnity, you know, you made an exception for the terrace neighborhood, but you know, just so we're all on the same page. Now, I was led to believe that that was updated. Apparently it wasn't. I mean, it had Ken's name on it. That's how old it was. He was the chair back then. So, you know, that's all fine and dandy. But I do have one quick point. You know, I do think that Ken's suggestion that the engineer come in is valid. And when the first report was issued, I did ask the town manager if that was going to be the case, because we did have questions, and he said no. Part of what's driving up the expense is we don't get the opportunity to vet these questions in person. And it would be very reassuring to look somebody in the eye and say, is our system going to fail? Are we on the right track? We are all operating in the dark. You know, we're learning a lot about what how these systems work, but I realize it's like anything else. It's part science, and it's a lot of art. And if our system is a lot of art, which it looks like it might be, there's a lot of unknowns and a lot of questions. And the further I get into this, the more I really worry about
it. Bill, I think we've given the indication that we'll take the next... The simple matter is we did not ask the gentleman to come and appear. Okay. And we don't know whether he's willing or when he can come. So we'll take that next step on Ken's suggestion, and we'll go from there. As to the 4 points, the petition did not... If we go down Webster Road, all the other conditions, you know, are removed. The petition for concerns. And in the event that we do not go down Webster Road, which we have to obviously act on in part, if not in whole, we're taking seriously the other three. That's to address the point of order. So I would understand that you are still concerned about restitution, which is, in my mind, irrespective of whether the system goes through, right?
No.
No?
No.
No? And notice. Are we to believe that you're not concerned about those?
If it doesn't go through our system, why would we care?
Notice any of that follows? So it's really number one that your concern is, and should the concern not result in a route down Webster Road, what then?
If it doesn't go, well, then the other system, the other parts of it.
Yeah, that's why I'm confused. So we're trying to deal with all of them as we go along in a matter of information gathering. We can't, no decision has been reached here as to which way this is going to go, if indeed it's a viable question. I don't want us to come back in 2 months and we've decided that Webster Road is not viable and start all over again. I guess I'm just not communicating here.
No, I don't understand.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Florian Ferg, Morris Drive. I mean, I think my understanding was that if this were to go the way it was initially designed, which is down Webster Road, then restitution for our neighborhood is moot, it's a
non-issue. That's correct.
Right?
Yeah.
And so I guess I have to make the observation that there are, I think, legitimate questions around what we actually know about the system, which, of course, raises questions about what happens when you double the load. I find it interesting that Chris even acknowledges, well, we better keep an eye on this by videoing it for the next few years, because that means our own expert has questions also about it. And so I guess I would go back to, why can't we go back to the initial design and go down Webster Road? And then these other issues with restitution are also not an issue any longer?
Understand.
I know there's cost savings in terms of the pump station, the electric bill. I do wonder whether the developer could bear some of the responsibility.
Well, we have 2 years of approvals. We have a little more going on than just that. But it's true. There are a lot of factors.
There are unknowns. And again, that our own expert says we better keep an eye on this, is really validates our concerns entirely, that there's sufficient lack of knowledge around what we actually are dealing with, that I think predicting, even if this guy comes and tells us what he thinks, that may still leave the same lingering questions. And so it really makes me always go back to this.
I think it's going to, because in the end, there's going to be a view that any sector, any chord of the system is subject to the same questions.
Right, which again just really begs the question, well, why are we going this
exactly.
route? Why are we not going down Webster Road?
Which that's a good point. At?
And I think that's the design that all these people all in our neighborhood knew about.
That's a good point.
And so we were all a little bit surprised when we later in the game learned, oh, actually this planet has changed
a good point, because the concerns get answered by the fact this new pipe.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not 20-year-old pipe. I mean, some of it's pretty clear, Don't disagree. We're trying to build an understanding of how we got here. And we'll be happy to find out if the engineer can come. And if there are additional questions, those are timely now. So please let us know if you have further questions than what we've been dealing with. Chris might be asked to just give you some sense in the future of normal preventive maintenance for any part of our system, and we'll go from there. First, yourself.
Hi, Turnford, Morris Drive. I have a question for Chris, if that's okay, just a clarification, because you said the way the stormwater runoff occurs right now is not how we would do it now, is what you said. It's not how we would do it now because it's brick and mortar. I think you said stormwater because it's not how we would do now. It was in reference to the Potter Place. The stormwater runoff into the manhole where you were...
Yes.
It's not how we would do it now. And that's all part of
from the wastewater.
Right. So how would you do it now?
Right now we pour the...
Okay, so why did you say it's not how we would do it now, with inflection? Why did you say that?
Because we've changed our standards since.
Why? So what is the difference
in
standards? It's
more expensive to do it by brick, and now you can have it poured right at when the manufacturer makes it.
So it's not about leakage or concern about erosion?
No.
No. Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Chris. Tony?
I just want to point out that... Our systems didn't start to hook up until 2003. So, and we were given 5 years to hook up. So if you look at the letter from Paul Boney, he talks about it was in January 2003, and he talks about now we are at a point where people can start to hook up to the system. And in the letter that you have, that my neighbor gave you, July 2001, in there they explained why there was such a delay, part of it, in addition to all the problems they had with the ledge. They said that plant number one, where the sewage from Shelburne Heights will go, continues to have a moratorium on new hookups. We can't allow hookups in Shelburne Heights until the state lifts the moratorium. A notice will be sent when hookups may occur, and that happened in January of 2003. So that we were given a five-year period. So that went from 2003 to 2008. So it's been a little over 10 years, really, that the system has been at maximum, you know, that all 80 homes, it's not 77, it's 80, because we've got three new homes, have been
so it's erroneous to call it a 20-year system. It's more accurate to call it a 10-year.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just, you know, so just a clarification, you know, when you said it's been 18 years, it was 18 years since it was built, but it's only been, you know, since 2003 that people have started to hook up to the system. So it's really only been 10 years that it's been at maximum.
Okay.
You know, so I wanted to just make that point.
All right, how about this? If you have further questions that you think the engineer could help us with, would you please get them to Peter as quickly as you can this week? First. Second, we'll ask the engineer that did the review if he's willing to come and make a presentation at the next, at this point, the July 2 meeting. And if so, can the gentleman come at that time? We'll find out about that. We'll let you know so that you can come back and you can hear answers to questions you've recently raised, as well as ask questions of the information that he's provided on June 6th, June 14th, and June 20th.
What, isn't the meeting July 9th?
9th, I'm sorry. Okay?
Chris wanted to say something.
I just wanted to make one quick statement, because everyone seems to think that going down Webster Road is going to be the saving grace, and that's the way it was designed. And that's not the case. That was what was proposed to the town, to go down that direction. You know, sending that direction, that flow down Webster Road, does exactly what you said, Jerry. It could bring up all other issues, right? You've got Boulder Hill, Mech Farm, Beaver Creek, Rooney's Trailer Park, Lily Creek that was just built. All of those utilizing that line on Webster Road, which is an 8-inch line, okay? So we still don't have capacity issues in our line, but we have capacity issues at your pump station. So when you get down to the Webster Road pump station, there's not enough available emergency storage there, most likely. So there's going to have to be some upgrades to that. Whenever you get involved with things that are mechanical, such as pump stations, the probability of having something happen, an overflow or something failing, rises dramatically. The risk goes up. Versus something that's a gravity flow, it's very, very low risk.
So, well, these were some of the factors that I was commenting on before in the question.
So everyone just keeps saying, well, just
in the case of the alternative, there are other issues and other factors that we would need to consider. So my personal sense is that we have the fact of a bespoke system for which you've paid plays very strong in here. And that makes this a little unusual in terms of what to you may appear to be an incursion, and certainly is a reversal of a town policy that apparently you were advised of, and a reneging on a promise you were given. How much of that history we're going to be able to restore and understand, I'm not sure. The issue of restitutions, in my mind, should not be abandoned at this point, because we do not know the outcome of number one. Number one, we will continue on the path of trying to determine, to some degree of reliability, the existing system, what plans, potentially accelerating inspection. There are lots of other things we can discuss. And if that meets with your approval, we'll come back on the 9th and do that. will be prepared with hopefully the gentleman. It's going to depend on his schedule, and if he's on vacation, there won't be much we could do, and we may have to delay it until the 23rd of July. But we will ask him if he's willing to come, and we will task him additionally in his scope of work to respond to questions that arise in the meeting, but most hopefully you can give us now. That makes a difference if he knows right off. Is that agreeable? And then perhaps, as a matter of our responsibility, we can lay out in some two or three paragraphs what we see are the issues at large in making a change. I think that's a fair question, and I think that's a fair demand. I don't think we should be sitting here just ignoring the fact that that's an alternative, a potential alternative, and I think you deserve some explanation of why we don't think it's a good alternative if that's going to be our position. That'll lay the basis for us then to talk about what is the alternative, if there is one. And I'd like to keep the restitution discussion alive because that'll be a bear to have to repeat. And we all have a lot of things to do next fall. We've got budget and a whole bunch of other things. You do, you know. And I just assume while we're all here together and thinking of things as we go through and remembering stuff, that we keep that alive for that purpose. Okay? We'll see you on the 9th, if the gentleman can come. And hopefully most of you can. And if not, we'll see you on the 23rd. Okay? Thank you. We thank you for your patience, and we thank you for your attendance and participation. The next item as well involves you, Chris, I think, doesn't it?
Yep, mostly Peter. He's going to give the
wastewater budget presentation.
Yep.
Any of you are welcome to sit to the budget presentation.
Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry.
Thanks. Thanks for the input. Thanks, Andy. Thanks for coming.
You want to stay in, Andy?
When we get back to Williston to catch the last of the other
There you go. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you. Did you go home?
Could have taken a nap.
I did.
Okay, we're down to the hardcore and the wastewater budget.
Okay. Should be there at midnight.
Oh yeah. Yeah, we've got to remind people that when they hand stuff out, Mike can't get it.
I can't look
at it. Shouldn't be mailed it. I should have said that. I should have said something in the meeting. We'll make a point of saying that. But don't ask Mike. Anyway.
Mary's back yet?
She's.
You guys got time to come back on the 9th and do this? How much of a problem will that be?
We'd like it to be approved on the 9th. This was just going to be a discussion, and then.
All right, because my sense is we've got two gone, and a third is concerned about time.
This is going to be informational?
Yeah.
But the next meeting, if we just do it in one meeting, we would have to separate at that meeting. We would ask that.
All right, and why don't we anticipate at that point that we'll have time for an extended discussion? I've just asked Mary what the timing is, the timetable is for this presentation. And Peter's indicating that they need a decision on the 9th meeting, so we have time to discuss all this at that meeting. And tonight, therefore, which I said with two out and some pressure on time, could be just it will be an informational matter anyway. And maybe if we have questions, we can send those on to Peter in the interim and. Wait on the 9th. I mean, the 9th.
So you're saying now, Jerry, you don't have a quorum?
No, we have a quorum.
No, we have a quorum.
Okay.
We got two members who are going to miss this.
No, I understand. Yeah. I'm just thinking of the allocation request coming up next, which
no,
is a decision item.
No, now we do, because Mike
yeah,
is
going. We should vote on whatever we need to vote on.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, so you want to...
So bypassing the discussion.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I think, and I'll make a point to all the members that we aborted this for, in interest of time and whatnot. Please read it.
That's the... We're skipping item 9.
So we're going to move to, with all of our agreement, to the capacity allocation cycle, number 10.
Yep. So part of the Select Board's responsibilities is every 3 years to update our next three-year allocation cycle. So typically what's done is we look at what we have for design capacity of the facility, and then we take out what our average flows are, comes out of that equation, then we turn around and we look at what we have for committed reserve capacity, which is stuff that we've given allocation out but haven't been built. Comes up with a number, and just to make this really short, down in the bottom double line square rectangle you see in the bottom, we're in the 7th 3-year allocation cycle for our facility. Right now, it was set up for a 20-year life expectancy, 20-year allocation cycle. We're in our last 3-year allocation cycle that we're moving into right now. So what we're proposing now to you is what you see up here on the board, where it shows how much over the next 3 years we're going to give out to residential properties and non-residential properties for allocation. Understand that this is the total available allocation we have left split out over a 3-year period. What the plan is, and this will be a decision item on this, but what the plan is to come back to you next month with a revised allocation ordinance that spreads this distance out for what we think we can get for the life expectancy of our facility.
Oh.
So right now it was guesstimated, right, 20 years. We want to try to carry that out to year 2028, which is when we would be deciding on whether we're going to South Burlington or we're going to consolidate and stuff. So we can spread this allocation out over a longer period of time. Since we don't have this allocation available, that actually started expiring in May, we're kind of in a tough spot whether or not we can give this allocation out, whether or not you guys can approve these allocations if we don't have this allocation cycle already voted and approved on by you guys. So the next item we have on the agenda is, so hopefully we approve this tonight, and then we can approve that.
And Chris, sorry to interrupt, when you're talking about allocation, that's the amount of wastewater we can discharge per permit?
Correct.
Thank you.
Correct.
Mayor,
and what the
really
size of the facility
can align this to the 2028 plant, to the, you know, the structural thing.
Yeah.
Yes.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So that's what we're going to propose, but according to legal counsel, our ordinance specifies a 20-year thing, so we have to amend that ordinance along with, we'll amend this at the same time. So there's two documents that need to be approved. One is this right here. The other document is, this is called Attachment B to the ordinance. This is Attachment A. What this is actually a more descriptive component of what Attachment B shows. Attachment B is like a summary on a spreadsheet. This is the narrative component of the stuff that's not subject to the 3-year sewage treatment capacity allocation. Not much has changed. I can go through it real quick, or if you have any questions, you just ask me some questions. It's fairly straightforward and descriptive in there. So, and this hasn't changed any. Attachment A hasn't changed anything since the last 3-year cycle.
I remember when we did this last, Chris, that the question that seemed important to me at the time was whether we had any estimation from our experience of what the demand might be in that period. And I remember your response was it's been such a steady matter, the demand has been so steady that the amount of new construction and you know has been so minimal just in terms of capacity.
Correct.
That was not a source of concern or you know.
Correct. And I looked at that when we looked at whether or not we want to spread this life cycle out to the 2028 time frame.
Yeah.
As you can see here, just as an example, our total, in the total column for residential, right now we have 331,000 gallons to allocate over the next 3 years. Okay, that's a little excessive, seeing that on average, we have not granted since the inception of this ordinance in 2001, we have not granted more than 22,000 gallons in a 3 year cycle for residential or 5,600 gallons for commercial.
Yeah, I remember.
So these are really escalated numbers, not to get too confused. It's really small. But if we go to that 2028, which is going to be at another meeting, we're still looking at 27,000 gallons available for non-residential and 110,000 gallons available. So we have plenty of capacity to stretch.
Chris,
so,
what's the difference between B1 and B2?
B1 and B2, Lee, we weren't sure what we were going to get for a response from legal counsel on whether or not you could vote on extending this to 28. So if you look at B1, down in that bottom rectangle, you see remaining facility life in years is 3.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at B2, it's 9.
Okay, and that's as if you're going to 2028. Got
correct.
It. That's what I was thinking.
Correct.
Would we be voting on will we, our vote would be on
B1.
B1, right?
Correct. Yep, three remaining years.
I mean
years.
B2, right?
No, three remaining years. We don't have the authority yet in the ordinance. So we're gonna do this so we can continue to move forward with development in town, and then we'll amend this next month.
I know it's late. I don't understand why we have to do the allocation this way. Is that a historical thing, or what's the rationale for coming before the select board and asking us for permission to allocate wastewater?
So when you build a wastewater treatment facility, you always build it for more than what your design flows are currently, because you want to build it for the next 20 years, because you've got this bond that's going to linger out for a 20-year period. That's why they use a 20-year mark. And you don't want, which has happened in some communities, such as Morrisville, where an entity comes in and uses up all their capacity, and they're only 6 or 7 to 10 years into paying their bond, and they have a moratorium. They can't have any more connections to the wastewater treatment facility without going into a multi-million-dollar upgrade. Nice. So this is to spread that capacity out over a period of time in a structured manner.
I see. So it's just a regulatory structure.
Correct.
I get it. Okay, great. Thanks.
Okay. Any further discussion? Is there a motion to the effect?
I would move to approve the wastewater capacity allocation cycle set forth in attachment B1 in our materials.
And
attachment A. Yep. Thank you.
Moved by Mary to approve attachment A and attachment B1 as presented.
I will second.
Mike seconds. Any discussion? Hearing none, those approving, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
And those opposed, aye. Nay. Next item of wastewater allocation requests.
Very good. I think, I can lead off on that if you want, or do you want to mention that, Peter?
Go ahead.
So, a wastewater allocation request for the Yankee Doodle Motel. Is being redeveloped into a 63-unit residential housing.
Yay.
And they're looking at, I apologize because I have to go into the annotated stuff, they're looking for additional capacity of 7,050 gallons for residential housing, for residential. And we have the available capacity.
No, additional would mean from what the motel had as a
correct
as an allocation.
Correct.
So this is an expansion of the old motel.
It's an addition to what the whole hotel was currently had.
somehow that doesn't seem like an awful lot of additional capacity for 63 homes.
Yeah, it was a 15 unit motel.
Yeah.
And so forth. But yeah, all the calculations come in, and same as the environmental protection rules spell out what it was. So the number the number is correct.
Yeah.
So. Does that have a significant impact on fees, like townwide? Something like that?
It does. Whenever you don't have to expand your collection system and add more infrastructure, but can add additional people, because ideally, 100% efficiency would be you're using the maximum capacity and
that's a 0% investment.
Right, and more people coming in on the system means more revenue coming in, so hopefully it helps with rates and everything else. So that's one of the issues that we've always had in town and struggling is we got two wastewater treatment facilities, right. Very expensive to operate, but have a small user base.
Right.
You know, we need people to come in that are large users to help offset those.
So this is going to be 15 units? What'd you say?
63
units on the Yankee Doodle?
Yep. There'll be a parking. There's a parking garage underneath. There's three buildings.
Uh-huh.
Parking garage underneath, and then two levels of residential living.
Sort of like they did on the corner of Shelburne Road, across from Panera. I noticed that's parking.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like when you read their application. That's what it sounds like exactly.
Yeah, except I don't think they're having any kind of commercial space on the first floor. But you're right, the garage underneath and
nice.
It's disconnected.
People like that.
Yep, three different just separate buildings and
cool.
It looks
is
like
there a motion to approve that request?
So moved.
So moved by Mary to approve the wastewater allocation request of former Yankee Doodle, whoever they are.
I'll second.
Mike seconds. Any further discussion? Hearing none, those approving, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. And those opposed, nay. Thank you. And we thank you very much, Chris.
Yeah, for spending the night with us.
We're going to promise our two colleagues that we're going to promise that they will spend extra attention on the budget as presented so that we have, good questions at the ninth meeting, and we'll see you then. Not before.
Great, thank you.
Thanks, Chris. We appreciate the night you spent with us.
No problem.
Next item is a records retention policy, which Peter can note for us, is a revision of one that we passed at the last meeting.
I think what I described at the meeting was correct, but what you had in front of you for the policy was not correct. The intention here is to hold on to payment stubs for 7 years, with a seven-year retention schedule. I think the written policy implied that we would be just holding all payment information. This only would apply to the actual physical payment stubs that you tear off with your bill to have a seven-year retention policy on that. We keep payment and receipt records going back a number of years, but what we're talking about is the physical little tear-off stubs and receipts that we give people. They're basically overfilling our storage capacity, and so a seven-year retention ratio or time period should be reasonable.
The other records are kept digitally, is that?
Yes, electronically.
Yeah.
These are the little things that I spend so much time on, making sure the handwriting is absolutely perfect.
Yep.
And now you're going to throw them out.
After 7 years.
Is there any discussion?
No.
Is there a motion to approve?
I move to approve the records retention policy as submitted.
Second.
Mike approves, moves to approve, and Mary seconds the revision of August 14th, 2018 of the municipal records retention policy. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, those approving, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And those opposed, nay. The ayes have it. The next item is to a road naming item, and it is to name Luke Lane, currently a private road off Spear Street.
This was basically prompted by the development that happened in that area with a new house going in. We follow the state 911 road naming and numbering standards in Shelburne, even though we don't have an ordinance pertaining to that. That's been our practice. And those standards say that if a driveway shares three houses, three or more houses share a driveway or access to a town road, that road will be named. So that in this situation, previously there were two houses sharing this driveway. A third one is now going to be built, so that meets the three or more standard. So at that point, we approach the homeowners and request that they come up with a suggested road name, one that doesn't conflict with existing road names. We do provide a list of historic names in Shelburne, ask them to consider that, but it's not a requirement. We don't have an ordinance for that, so it's based on good faith. And in this case, the owners got together and named the road Luke Lane. It'll be a private road off Spear Street, approximately adjacent across from Barbary Lane, if you're familiar with that area of Spear Street. So the homeowners have reached consensus on that as their recommended road name.
Thank you, Peter. Discussion? Is there a motion to that, to the effect?
Move to name the private road off Spear Street Luke Lane.
Mary moves.
I'll second that.
Mike seconds to name the road as described as Luke Lane. Any further discussion? Hearing none. Those approving, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. And those opposed, nay. Thank you, Peter. Peter does Mike Yeoman work in this area. This is his one of his specific responsibilities. Next item is to approve an amendment to a $70,000 highway equipment note, 1 year term at 2.25%.
Similar to what we've done in the past, when we're funding shorter term loans, like for highway equipment, vehicles, things like that, that don't go to the bond bank or long term financing, we'll take out a note for 1 year and then renew it the following year, pay down a portion and renew the balance for another year. This is similar to that. The bank that we're with, Union Bank, suggested rather than having to execute loan documents every time, to just simply extend the loan another year, at which point we will pay down a portion of the principal now and renew the balance. It saves having to do 4 or 5 pages of loan documents. So they've done that in this case. It's currently a $70,000 note. We took that out a year ago. We'll be paying down $35,000 once it gets renewed, and the balance will be due a year from now. And that's with Union Bank. So it's a 1 year note with a 2.25% interest rate. It's funding a highway truck that we purchased a little over a year ago.
Questions of Peter? The audience? Hearing none, is there a motion?
Move to approve amendment to the $70,000 highway equipment note for a 1 year term at 2.25% with the Union Bank.
Mary moves to approve the amendment as described. Mike
seconds.
Those approving, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Right.
And those opposed, nay. Thank you.
I do have one document that needs to be signed.
The next item is to set a date for a special meeting to set the tax rate for the current fiscal year, or nearly the current. Is there a recommendation?
What we're waiting for is the official word from the state as to what the school tax rates are, because under Act 60, those are now set by the state, not by the town. We'd like to get the official notice of that. I expect they'll be coming in next week. Because of the time crunch between getting that notice and when we have to get tax bills out by the 15th of July, we do ask for a special meeting. It's very brief. We just go over what the grant list is and the calculations. It's very straightforward, but we would like that prior to, so we could do it sometime next week. It could be a call-in by phone, potentially even a conference call, if that works for you.
Sure.
But next week, probably Tuesday or later, I would say, so we have time to get the notice from the state as to what the school rates are.
Do you want to set a time? Do you want to give us a time now?
Whatever works for the board, I'd be happy to accommodate.
It's okay with me. And ordinarily, I can be physically. You need one person to be physically present, so I can do that. And
that's what
I seems okay.
Yeah,
too.
I'm fine.
What's the date?
Whatever's convenient would be. I can send out a notice.
Like Wednesday the 3rd or Tuesday the 2nd? Is that too soon?
The 3rd.
Maybe Wednesday.
Yeah, the 3rd is
hard. I'll be at fireworks. It'll be hard to hear.
Yeah.
Okay, that's all.
Could be during the day. I mean, any time that's convenient.
Are you talking over the phone?
Yeah, it could be.
Oh, yeah, I remember doing it last year, yeah.
Yeah, I can.
But you're going to send us info.
Mm-hmm, certainly, yeah.
All right, but you want to set the time now?
Maybe Wednesday, during the day, is that a possibility, or would you?
Wednesday, the 3rd, during the day?
7:30 at 10?
No, I'm in a mediation all day.
It's my wedding anniversary.
You can try Tuesday.
Tuesday.
All right, how about Tuesday we go around to... Oh, Tuesday works. Okay with you?
Tuesday's fine.
But what about Colleen and...
Well, if there's three of us who can agree on it, we'll set it.
Okay. And send it to the board.
Yeah, we would have a quorum with just three.
So we're saying 7:02 at...
What? Whatever you want.
10?
Yes. 10 a.m.? Okay.
Okay?
Sure.
7:02 at 10.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. And the next and your final item is to execute documents for the $3.9 million bond for the Library Town Center project.
Seems like you probably had a lot of documents you've been signing for this. This will be the last one. The bond bank will be going to market in July. And these are the final documents that we need for the loan for the Library Town and Town Hall project. $3.9 million, as we talked about before. And basically just needs the board's approval and signatures, and then the bonds will be sold, and we'll know what the rates are very shortly.
Thank you. We can execute that, I think, having adjourned, or we can adjourn as we've all signed.
I have the documents here.
Yeah, all signed, whatever your pleasure.
And whatever works, you can sign them.
Yep, okay.
Just need a motion.
Yeah, I think why don't we move to adjourn, because those our guests can then, well, and then we'll do the signing after.
That's fine. I move that we adjourn.
Mike moves. My understanding, by the way, in parliamentary procedure is that that's all that's required, and it does not need voting.
Okay.
It's already been voted.
Yeah. No, I mean, you don't need to vote on a motion to adjourn.
No.
If the motion is made...
Yeah. As far as...
Yeah.
Number 16.
No, we're all. You're right.
Yeah,
you're right.
It's already been voted on.
Yeah, you're right, Dave. We're all
signed.
Yeah.
Bonds. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.